Our guest speaker, Denise Lawrence, who's been practicing meditation with the Brahma Kumaris since 1974. That's a total of 42 years. A little bit about her I want to share, which I think is quite significant. Between 1975 and 2000, she set up and established Brahma Kumaris centres and served as coordinator in Germany, Canada and USA. During those years, she presented 100 television programs on Raja Yoga meditation. She made a further 100 TV programs on addiction recovery. She taught meditation to addicts recovering from narcotics within the Los Angeles prison system. From 2001 to 2007, she lived at the Brahma Kumaris spiritual headquarters at Mount Abu, Rajasthan, India, and wrote 10 textbooks of diploma programs in education, in values and spirituality. The course is currently being offered at 7 Indian universities. There's more. From 2007 to 2010, Denise was national coordinator for the Brahma Kumaris in Canada, based in Toronto, and coordinated 11 centres. Now she divides her time between the spiritual headquarters in India and the international headquarters at London, travelling extensively, presenting lectures, seminars, retreats and conferences throughout the world.
Om Shanti. So this subject, virtues, values, ethics and morality, is actually a very subtle and complicated one. And why I am interested in it is because I feel that when we consider virtues, values, ethics, and morality to be all more or less one and the same thing, that puts us in trouble. And I would like to talk to you about how we get in trouble by considering all of these four things to be pretty much equivalent of each other. Now, of course, everyone here is highly moral. Yeah? I wonder if I could make a request to have a bit more house lights because I can't see you. I have to see who I'm talking to. Is that possible?
House lights?
House lights, yes, we have people here. that's great, yes. So, values seem to have nationalities, like you hear about British values, right? You hear about Indian values, you hear about Islamic values, Christian values, so they have a religion also. You have modern values, ancient values. So there's a time component there as well. Ethics. Ethics. What is ethics? If you look it up in the dictionary, ethics comes from a Greek root. And if you look up morality, it comes from a Latin root. And basically they both mean the same thing. But in the English language usage, we tend to make them different. Ethics is all to do with business and professional activity, and morals is all to do with behavior of individuals in the society, in the family system, and so on. We kind of divide it that way. But otherwise, they have exactly the same meaning. And the meaning of them is the prevailing ideas in the society about what is right and wrong. In other words, they come from a human source, and they correspond to the state of the people in any given group at a particular time. And what that means is they change over time. Now, on the other hand, if you look at virtues, virtues come from a divine source. They are not created by public opinion. Values, ethics, and morality are created by public opinion. And I want to also show you another level of the contrast between them. Everybody here is very moral, right? You're very moral people, yes? Non-moral people would be unlikely to be sitting here. This is not the kind of place where immoral people like to come. So I think I'm pretty convinced that all of you are very moral people, and you have your values, and you have your ethics, and you live by those. And now you also presumably feel that you're also virtuous, or at least you're striving to be virtuous, because anyone who comes to a Brahma Kumari center is often hearing about, you know, goodness and purity and sweetness and this sort of thing, yeah? And we try to become all that, and we don't want to be angry and violent and greedy and arrogant and all that, right? Yes? So, it stands to reason that these four words, virtues, values, ethics, and morality, are a continuity, and they're all pretty much the same thing. And even if one has a divine origin and the other has a human origin, it doesn't really matter much, yeah? But what I feel is it matters a huge amount, and there's lots of consequences of not differentiating between the three, the values, ethics, and morality on one side, and the virtues on the other side. So I would like to talk to you about them in such a way that perhaps you may end up agreeing with me that, no, they're very different. And we have to start thinking about them with these distinctions. So who creates the values, the ethics, and the morality is basically the group in any given society who is the elite and who is in power. I see. So if you say, okay, Leicester, right? Here we are in Leicester. I don't know that much about Leicester, but anyway, we'll hope for the best. Leicester is it's an English place in England, and it's a very multicultural place, right? You have people from all over the world. You have multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-religious people here in large numbers. And I think that this is very significant because you can see and feel around you that there are really different values that are dear to people of different communities, which do not tally with the values of people of other communities. And we have to live together, and so we have to figure it out, you see. So we have, there's a difference between Christian values, Islamic values, Hindu values, Jewish values, and Buddhist values. And I don't know if there are any other categories religion-wise, but there may be. And if there are, their values would be a little different. And the values and the morals and the ethics have to do with dress, right? Virtues have nothing to do with your dress, you see? values have something to do with what you eat and how you eat it. You wipe the fingers with a knife and fork, a spoon, something else, chopsticks, you know. And, you know, if you're in a community which uses chopsticks and you don't know how to use chopsticks, you will feel very uncomfortable and clumsy as you try to get a pea on a chopstick, or you try and get a grain of rice. You know, it's very difficult. And you will think that these people really need to learn to use a knife and fork like everybody else, except it isn't everybody else, it's your group of people. And so what is better, chopsticks or knife and fork or spoon or fingers? You know, now in England years ago where I grew up, you know, eating with your fingers was considered like really bad. You eat with your fingers, that's like uncivilized. Only babies do that. And so you see, these values are created by people who look at external things, you see. But virtues are nothing to do with how you eat and what you eat and how you dress, you know. I mean, there was a time when if the woman would be wearing trousers or slacks, that would be like really, really bad. You know, and in some communities, if you're wearing a miniskirt, like that's really, really bad, you see. And so, you know, how do you find what is really the core? So this is what I'm trying to show you, that there are very different things that values, morals, and ethics are looking at. Take money, for example. In Islam, you are not allowed to take interest if you lend money. That's absolutely against the law. Did you know that? Yeah. So they find a way around it. But, you know, it's not good to take interest. There's some laws around it, original laws around it, because it causes people to become poor unnecessarily, you see. And then there are other cultures where taking interest is the only way to fly. And so you have really big differences in terms of how you think about money. You know, there are differences in terms of the position and status of women and men in different societies. In some societies, the woman is expected to go to work. In other societies, absolutely forbidden. You know, if you want to go to work, that's not okay. You know, but hey, we need money. No, you don't. You do. So for women in a situation where you're in a modern world, in a traditional society, there's a problem of not being allowed to work because you will starve, you know, and that's a problem. So these are all things to do with ideas that arose in ancient times, which may have applied in ancient times, which don't apply in Leicester today, in wherever we are, 2016. And so we have to take a look at all this, because circumstances have changed so much that these systems don't work anymore. So, virtues. Virtues I find better than values, morality, and ethics, to such a point that I would strongly recommend that we abandon morality, ethics, and values. That's a very strong statement, I know. But I would like to talk about why I think like that and see whether you might also come to think something like that too. So virtues originate in God, not anywhere else. Of course, God is mysterious. Nobody knows who or what or where God is, but most moral people believe in God. Is that right? You're moral people, you believe in God, so that's good. And of course, God does not create morality, but you probably thought that he did. You see? Because if you look at the scriptures and the religious traditions, they talk a lot about morality in such a way that you would imagine that this all comes from God. Because it looks like that, and it feels like that, and it sounds like that. But if you examine it very, very closely, you find that, well, there is a little bit of a discrepancy, and if you turn on the microscope, you find there's a big discrepancy. But if you don't turn on the microscope, you don't see it so well. Now, one of the things that we hear about in the study of the Brahma Kumaris, which is where you are, you're in the Brahma Kumaris Center, is we hear that the original qualities of a human soul are purity, power, love, bliss, and peace. These are called the original qualities of the soul, and they are also qualities of God. And we also say, you know, a soul is a child of God, a soul is created by God. So the qualities of God are there in the human souls. And if you think about it, here we are coming back to Leicester, a very multi-religious, multi-ethnic, multicultural community where there are occasional disagreements which may flare up every so often, due to the differences of values and ethics and morality, because there are clashes of values. But have you ever come across a clash of virtues? Is it possible to have a clash between peace and love? Generally, peace, if you've got peace and you've got love, it'll be all right. You'll not have a problem. So these original qualities, I use the term quality for them rather than virtue, because there are very specific words in the different languages. Here we're doing English, so it's okay for me. And sometimes these words translate into other languages easily, sometimes not so easily. Because languages arise out of people's thinking, different cultures, you know, will have words for things that you don't have in other cultures. But it is said, and I think by theistic traditions generally, that God is the ocean of virtues. And an example of a virtue would be sweetness. Somebody's sweet, that's nice. Patience, that's a good virtue. Then we also have another thing which we talk about in Brahma Kumaris as the powers of yoga. They're again different. The powers are different, the virtues are different. Now take a word like tolerance. Tolerance is a quality, it's a virtue, it's a power, depending on how you're using it. It will shift from being one thing to another thing. But very often we in Brahma Kumaris, we consider tolerance as a power. You have a power of tolerance. We have a virtue of sweetness. And we look at all these things quite a lot and in quite detail because we're interested in building our characters and creating ourselves in a way that is that really corresponds to the very best that we could be. And of course, each and every person is highly individual. We have different characteristics, we have different talents, we have different orientations. We're very, very different, and we're the human soul is very subtle, very complex, and made up of many invisible things. And each person is a constellation of virtues and powers and qualities and specialities and so on. And I think the direction of God or the instruction of God is, hey, all my children who are so very, very different, would you please harmonize with each other? And now there are, nearly 8 billion of us, all very, very different. And you try and harmonize 8 billion people. That's difficult. And our differences cause us to come into conflict with each other relatively easily. And I feel that this is exacerbated by mixing virtues with ethics and values and morals. And thinking that if something is moral, it's also virtuous. Or if something is ethical, it's also virtuous. Or if something is a value, it's also a virtue. So one of the things that I found about values is that people often talk about universal values or human values as if there is such a thing. There really isn't. And they do this very often because of this confusion between virtues, qualities, and values. But I would like to really separate them. You see, a value, the word value, corresponds to figures. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These are values. And what I find with values is they keep changing, like foreign exchange rates. And you have to keep up with them to find out which value is more than the next one, you see. And if you have a majority of people of one type of value and then a minority of people with a different value, that majority will consider the minority to not have any values because there's less of the people who have that other value, you see. But if you move away from values into virtues, like generosity, this is a virtue. As if you're generous, it's nothing to do with what culture you're from, nothing to do with how you dress, nothing to do with what you eat, nothing to do with whether you're male or female, or whether you're rich or poor, you see. So values tend to be limited to these different categories, whereas virtues, they will cross all of these boundaries and they will not be under the influence of these differences. They are very much universal. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't like to be loved. Love is a very, very fundamental, foundational quality. But if you have, you know, in some places, racism is a value. Yeah. And so if you have love with the value of racism, then you will love people of one race and not of another race, you see. And that is a self-contradiction, you see. But people don't see it because I think they don't really look at it so, they don't scrutinize it with a new eye. And I think what happens very much in the way that we think is we tend to adopt patterns of thinking that correspond with the patterns of thinking of the people we grew up with, or the people that we went to school with, or if we are in a company, we will adopt the values of that particular company. For example, if you are in banking, I saw an interesting program about Goldman Sachs. If you're in Goldman Sachs Bank, then the highest value is monetary. If you have more money than anybody else, that means you are the best quality human there is, you see. And that is the value in that corporation. But as soon as you come out of that, you come into a different gathering who have different values, then all of a sudden they will consider your values to be not values at all. They will consider it to be some sort of a aberration, some kind of very negative trait, you see. And so there will be big disagreement, and there will be judging, and there will be all this type of thing going on. So disharmony, clash, conflict comes through differences of values, differences of morals, differences of ethics. But when you come to virtues, they, I think, because they don't come from people, because they come from a higher source or a divine source, I think that they're better, you see. Because if you look at them, well, first of all, we see that they don't inherently bring about conflict. They rather inherently tend to bring about harmony. And virtues don't tend to get enforced, whereas values, morals, and ethics need an enforcing agency. See, and so these values, these morals, these ethics, they are enforced with the use of violence. Violence is used to punish people who do not behave according to the values that are being enforced. And if you don't comply, you will pay. You will be punished, you see. Or say, for example, in a society, a social grouping. If somebody doesn't go along with the morals of that social grouping, they can be marginalized, they can be ostracized, they can be excluded. And that is a form of violence, you see. There's no blood drawn, but it's still a form of violence. And the other thing that happens, as I mentioned earlier, the ethics and values and morality is set by the elite in any community. And most communities' elite tends to be males and wealthy, and in multicolored communities in Western world, white-skinned, you see. And so that means that the values are biased against whoever is not like that. They'll be biased against women, against children, against animals, against plants, and against stones. And this is why you have the climate change problem, for example, as a result of irresponsible exploitation of natural resources, for example. And because of the value system, which says, well, I can take what I want because I have power, and that's okay. You see, without thinking long-term consequences. But if you're operating from virtue, you're operating from harmony, sensitivity to harmony, you will naturally take what you need, but not more than that. There was a very poignant poem or a speech of an Indian chief in the United States called Chief Seattle in the 18th century, when the white man started to come over to USA, and there were these plains with many, many buffalo and like this. And so they would kill them and just leave them in hundreds and hundreds and thousands. They would just kill them. And now there's not very many left. But otherwise, you know, for the Indian there, you kill the buffalo and then you feed the village. And you don't kill all of them, you kill one, you see. And that's not going to cause a problem. Hunting for sport has caused a lot of loss of species or extinction of species unnecessarily, because of not thinking that you know, the animals have a right to live. So when you go for virtue, when you go for love, when you go for peace, when you go for harmony, when you go for gentleness, these kinds of things, it works much, much better to live with people. You don't really see a person's body color. You see a person's soul. You see, because that's the essence of the person. That's who you relate to. You see. And so you can see that these values and ethics and morality, which are, you can say, man-made by the elite in any particular group, the values will correspond to the particular interests of that group. But if you go for virtues, it corresponds to the interests of everyone in the community, you see. It cannot be based on specific interests and still be a virtue. That's not possible. So you can begin to see, as I'm describing these things, that there is a definite difference between, on the one hand, values, ethics, and morality over here, and virtues, and I would also put powers along with virtues, although I didn't put it in the name of the program. But you know, if you are a virtuous person, you're like a flower. And what happens to flowers? They get stomped on. So if you're just virtuous, that's dangerous. That's too vulnerable. And so you have to have powers as well, because you have to be able to protect yourself, to defend yourself, to be able to assert your right to be there and take your place in the world. So powers give you resilience, give you the ability to persist and endure and protect yourself when there may be any obstacle to your continued happy existence. And this is why I think that we will see in this division between virtues and powers over here, values, ethics and morality, that values, ethics and morality are fundamentally based in materialism. Whereas virtues and powers are fundamentally based in spirituality. So you have again a division between materialist paradigm and the spiritual paradigm. And so you have to really ask yourself, who am I? What am I? The fundamental question that we look at always in the Brahma Kumaris Raj Yoga centers, and the answer that is presented is, well, I am a soul. And a soul is actually genderless. So values that make a difference in value between if you're male, you have a higher value than if you're female, that has to do with your body, but the soul itself is genderless. So we have a real problem with pronouns, because a soul is a someone rather than a something. And then you know, you say for yourself, well, I'm a man or I'm a woman. Generally speaking, we say this. And if you leave your body, which eventually we all do, then your body is considered as the remains, right? They use the word remains. So somebody's remains is not a person, isn't it? It's left behind by the person who has gone. Because souls leave their bodies after some time when they're not usable anymore. And so then we don't have a pronoun for a genderless soul. It doesn't exist, because it's neither a he nor a she nor an it. We don't have any other pronoun, do we? And if we invent one, nobody will go along with it, so it's a problem. But, you know, when you look at it in this way, your body is an object given life by your spirit. And once your spirit isn't there anymore, then your body is a thing. It's the remains, which have to be got rid of because they get smelly and unhealthy. You see. Now, so when you think of yourself as genderless, it changes your morality, your values, and your ethics totally. So you have to rethink it all. And how are you going to rethink that? Well, I think it's best to go back to the virtues, because the soul, which is fundamentally made of purity, peace, power, love, bliss, you know, the virtues are absorbed into the soul. And there's a big variety of virtues, and we all have different ones to a greater or lesser extent. And powers also to a greater or lesser extent. But, you know, love is not limited to women and then men don't have it. It's not like that. You know, power is not limited to men and women don't have it. But the value systems tend to differentiate in that way, that men have power, women do love, and that's okay. But it's not really true, you see. Because everyone needs power. Everyone must love and loves to be loved. You know? Everyone feels better when they're pure. Everyone likes peace. And if you're in bliss, that's great. And it's nothing to do with maleness and femaleness, you see. And, you know, souls are eternal. Forever. So, they don't have an age. So you can't say, I'm older than you. Because we do that. Because there's a value system which says that the older a person is, the more valuable they are. And younger people must, by definition, give a lot of regard to older people. So you have an age hierarchy. And it would be nice, perhaps, if it works like that. But what I found, I was analyzing the process of corruption. And I found there are very, very few children who are naturally corrupt. Corruption occurs as you get older. And the older you are, the more likely you are to get corrupt. You see? But the value system says the other way around. The old people are not corrupt, the young people must be. You know. Yeah, I've seen it. You know. Young people always lie, excuse me. It's not like that. It doesn't work like that. So there are a lot of assumptions about the relative value of older people and younger people, which are kind of made up. Because if you analyze it and you look at the realities, you find that it doesn't correspond with the assumptions. It may in some cases, but in a general way, it very often doesn't. And so I'm saying all of these things because I am keen to encourage people to sort of abandon these things. But now there's another issue that comes up. When the ethics and morality and values were created, I think it was done at a time where people felt disconnected from the divine. And in that situation, you have to do your best and work it out. In the absence of a full connection with the divine. But what I think eventually a time comes when the divine, when God becomes universally accessible. And God being the source of power, the source of virtue, it changes the situation. Because you see, if you don't have a connection with God, you better be moral, ethical, and have your values. Because otherwise, it's going to be a catastrophe. But if you do have a connection with God, like a real living connection, you are going to be able to nurture yourself with those qualities, those powers. Isn't it right? And in that case, that is going to allow you to let go, little by little, of those values that don't actually correspond with the powers and the virtues that you're experiencing through your connection with God. I see. So this is really what I'm proposing, is to encourage everyone to really think about your connection as spiritual beings to the Supreme Being, the Supreme Spirit, or God, or Allah. There's many different names for this one. And the other thing I would ask you to look at is your conscience. And conscience is very interesting because, I mean, everybody has one, right? You all have a conscience. But I asked lots of people over different periods of time, you know, how many times a day do you think, say, write, or do things which are against your own conscience? And the usual number is about 6 or 7 times a day. It's little things, not big things at all, little ways, you know. A little white lie, you fudge on some truth, this or that, little things. And whenever you do something against your conscience, you'll hear about it from the inside. And there's no law against it, so you're not breaking any laws or getting any problem with the law enforcement agencies, but it's an internal thing. Now, one of the laws of spirituality says that every time you think or say or write or do something against your conscience, it loses a little bit of functionality. You see, and that's a big one, you see, because the most reliable thing you have is your conscience, isn't it? And, of course, the voice of conscience sometimes is a very small voice. It's usually there, especially in moral people, it's there. But when we go against it 6 or 7 times a day, multiply that by how old you are, minus about 4 or 5, because you don't do too much against your conscience in very young childhood. Then you can see how much functionality has been eroded from your conscience, that you actually have to rely on external moral authorities to figure out what's right and wrong when your conscience doesn't talk to you anymore. Because if you go against it to a sufficient extent, it's going to say, okay, I'm not talking anymore, you know, there's no point. And so I think one of the exercises that we try and do is to see, you know, can you spend an entire day following the voice of conscience? And it's very expensive to do that. And normally people will tell you it doesn't cost you anything to do the right thing, right? That's not true. It costs you a lot more to do the right thing than to do the wrong thing. And this is a very good reason why people do the wrong thing. It's cheaper. Makes good economic sense. But from a karmic point of view, it's a different set of values here. And the main thing I think that is a matter of concern is I do not want to have a non-functioning conscience. That's a problem. I want a functioning conscience, right? So if you put together this idea, okay, you follow your conscience, even though it's expensive to do it. Expensive in the sense that if you do the right thing, you will pay. You know? Because it's going to be in the way of somebody else's advancement, or it's going to show somebody up to be not right and they will not like that. Or sometimes if you do the right thing, people around you will say, well, are you making out that we're bad people? You know, and they will give you some sort of a punishment for that. So you will pay. So what that also means is you need to have a good amount of inner power in the form of wealth so that you can manage this type of extra payment that you have to make for doing the right thing or being the right thing or saying the right thing or sticking your neck out or standing up for what you feel is right or who you feel is right, you see, you will pay. So the whistleblower syndrome. But consider this, that if you have a well-functioning conscience and you have a good relationship with the Supreme Being and you spend a lot of time cultivating virtues and powers, you are not going to do the wrong thing. So you don't really need sort of the external systems of morals and ethics and values to keep you on the straight and narrow, because you are doing that from the inside. And if you think about it, how are laws made? They're made after somebody starts doing something bad that isn't against the law. And then they say, well, this should be against the law, and then they make it against the law, and then it's wrong after that. But before that, it wasn't wrong. You see, that's how laws get made. And so people are always trying to find loopholes, because if I can find a loophole, that makes it right. It doesn't matter about conscience, you see. So this is really what I'm proposing, is to really think for yourself about your own personal ethical policy, or create your own personal ethical policy based on your cultivation of your virtues, and you will set your own value system, and in that way you become a thought leader, you become a moral authority in your own right, you see. And this is power, this is influence, and I think that this is a very good thing to do with your life, because it has very, very beneficial influence on those who come in your contact. Anyway, I'm going to stop there. I've said many things, and I can hear Natalie coming up the stairs here.
Thanks, Denise. We've got time for questions now, and there's a mic coming round here. If anybody wants to raise their hands and wait for the mic to come.
We have one over there. So I might have been a bit provocative, you, and then afterwards. Yeah.
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
Thank you for all the inspiring words that you've spoken today. I'm not a follower of Brahma Kumari, but this is my mum, and she's constantly drip feeding little virtues to me and stuff. And it's and I just came to visit my mum today, so I came here. And there's just one question that I really have, which is niggling away in my head here, that we talk about the values, morals, and ethics, and how they're man-made, and you know, from all the different cultures and powers and elite. And as part of one of those things, you talked about how it can cause conflict because of the way the values are and things. But then when you talked about virtues, and I totally believe in the concept of abandoning the values, the ethics and the morals, and following virtues, you added power into that.
Powers.
Yeah. And sorry, I've been making notes on my phone, so I'm trying to ask the question the best way. And you said, like, with the powers, to be resilient, to be strong, to stand your ground, to do that sort of stuff, couldn't that actually, the powers element, take a negative effect as well? It's just something I'm finding a bit confusing.
Yeah, because I didn't really talk in detail about the powers. Those things, resilience, that's what the powers give you. They are not the powers themselves. So the powers themselves, we study about 8 powers, and then there are some additional ones. For example, the power of silence. It's very subtle, but it's accumulated inner power. The power to accommodate all kinds of different behaviors in people, and just accommodate. The power to cooperate. To take cooperation, to give cooperation, to interact with people in a cooperative manner is a very good power. The power to face, first thing you have to face is yourself. Face reality, face truth. That's big power. The power to withdraw. You know, sometimes you want to be center stage and sometimes you just really need to stand back and let everybody else move forward. That's a good thing. The power to judge. To judge accurately. To be a good judge of character. To judge, what am I going to do next, given the circumstances, whatever. If you can have good power of judgment, this is very, very good. You will not make stupid judgments. You will not misjudge, misread a situation. You need the power of what we call the power of discrimination, which means that you can figure out exactly what is there in front of you, which is sometimes hidden from view. But if you have that good power, you can tell what's there. You're not going to be deceived. So these are some of the powers. The power of transformation, that when somebody delivers an insult to you, can you transform it into a compliment? That's a good power.
That was very enlightening. a different view of power now. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Not that kind of power that corrupts and corrupts absolutely. But, you know, sometimes power will come into our hands and we need to know how to use power and not abuse it. It's very easy to abuse power.
Thank you, that's so lovely. I have a question for you as well now. Denise, you talked about values today. In this society, there's a lot of depression, there's a lot of drug addiction, and what I'd like to ask you is, what advice would you give to someone who's lost in that kind of world and wants to come out? How do they go about doing it?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because conventional society looks at drug addicts as bad people and they put a value judgment on it. And so if a person wants to come out of it from that angle, they want to become a good person from being a bad person, but it's not like that. You see, I have a huge amount of knowledge about drugs, drug addiction, weapons, violence, all this stuff, because these are issues that people face. And what the World Health Organization has an interesting definition of addiction. And it says that any substance or behavior or activity that you persist in doing or using in spite of negative consequences, that is an addiction. And so there's, you know, covers almost everybody. You've got some sort of an addiction, you know. Another aspect of addiction is that you will use or abuse a substance because you're unable to manage your feelings. I mean, people of my generation, right, I'm in my late 60s, our parents went through the Second World War and they were being bombed and they started smoking because of being bombed. Doesn't make them bad people, you see. But nicotine is something that you can use as a sort of tranquilizer when you're being bombed, which is not a very nice way to live. And there's a lot of people in this world who are suffering from different kinds of abuse or oppression or whatnot and so forth. Or they grow up in highly dysfunctional families. And these are the ones who will use and abuse drugs as a way to deal with how they feel about their situation. And so there are many people now, professional people, who look upon drug use as an illness rather than an aspect of badness, you see. And so if a person wants to come out of addiction, usually it has to get pretty bad, very, very bad, before they will say, yep, my problem is I'm an addict. And usually they are not the ones who come up with this idea. Sometimes, yes, but very often it's other people who will say, look, you're in this situation for no other reason than you're using and abusing drugs, alcohol, weapons, whatever it is, you see. And for that, you need to be very well educated in the subject. And there are many, many preconceptions and values and attitudes and so on that are assumptions that somebody who does this is a bad person. You never think that it is a response to a bad situation that is a lifelong thing. You see what I'm saying? And most people don't know this. So there's a great deal of education required for the society who has been maybe miseducated or misinformed about these things. I mean, alcohol is legal, but it does a huge amount of damage, and it's known to be bad for health, bad for marriages, bad for work, bad for lots of things. But the lobby, the alcohol lobby, will make sure that alcohol remains legal, and they say you must drink responsibly, you know. So, but use of alcohol, if you're driving, it changes your perception of distance. It changes your perception of speed. If you're on alcohol, you're going to make driving mistakes which endanger the other drivers, but it's still legal because somebody made money out of it, you see. So we have a lot of double standards in our society around what's okay and what's not okay, you see, because of financial considerations. I mean, in India, there was a time when they thought, okay, we're going to ban alcohol everywhere, you know. Didn't last very long because they lost all that revenue in taxes. So there's only Gujarat, which is a dry state, but then they keep coming over to Rajasthan, get some whiskey, take back for drinking secretly at home. You see, so I live a lot on the border between Rajasthan and Gujarat, and it's packed full of Indian-made foreign liquor, I call it IMFL. It's not foreign at all. But, you know, there's a value system there which says that alcohol is foreign, you know. But you have alcohol from coconut, you have alcohol from rice, you have alcohol from sugar cane, you know, is very Indian. So this is another of the problems with values and ethics and morality, double standards, hypocrisy. One law for me, a different law for you, you see. So you can see how it corrupts. And this is why, again, I say, we don't need those things. Let's go for virtues, if we can. We have a couple of hands over here. And a brother in the furry collar.
Thank you very much for your talk. It was very informative. I have two different questions on two different topics, and I would like to get some clarifications on that. The first thing is about the virtue of love. You said that everybody wants to be loved, which means there should be someone loving everyone. So how exactly is it to be done?
well, you know, I love you, you love me, that creates a balance.
No, it doesn't. Well,
but of course,
someone is not something I would call it's like love. Or
it's never enough, is it?
It's superficial. So.
But then it's not love.
Yeah, so exactly.
So, yeah, love is, I called it a quality of the soul, a quality of God. In meditation, we go with certain ideas, like that the soul is made up of purity, peace, power, love, bliss, all these qualities. And when these qualities are used up, you get hungry. You're running on empty, you're spiritually depleted. And again, this is a reason for addiction. You want to fill up that hole in your soul, which can never be filled with, you know, achievements or material objects or get married or have a relationship or whatever it is. It's never enough. And so the source that can actually fill the soul would be God, would be the Supreme Being, who's the ocean of love and who has plenty, plenty of love to go around. So in that sense, we would say that creating a very strong connection with the Supreme and nurturing yourself through that connection is going to make you an emotionally independent person, so that you're able to love, and if somebody doesn't love you anymore, it's not a problem. I don't mind. I'm still okay. So it's better. Yes, it's okay. You've got the sound now.
Yeah. So, in essence, it means that you're non-judgmental, right?
Well, I really don't like that word. You see, it's a very, very popular word, unconditional love and non-judgmental. You know, I'm dead against those two words. Because it's very conditional, and non-judgmental is a word that people ought to, instead of using non-judgmental, I think you should say don't criticize people. Because it's really about that, isn't it? It's not right to criticize people, but you don't want to be unable to evaluate. And there's a famous Indian story. I don't know if any of you come from Gujarat, but it's a Gujarati story. I can't pronounce it right, so you have to excuse me for this. But Takesir Baji, Takesir Khaja, you know the rest of it, Chompat Raja. This is the story about if you don't have any power of judgment and discrimination, you're finished. And that's a very wise, wise story. And this expression, non-judgmental, I don't know who invented it, but it really went viral and everybody uses it, and I'm dead against it. What to do?
So if that is the case, you said that tolerance is one of the values that...
No, tolerance is one of the powers.
Okay.
If you are a tolerant person, it means that there are many different aspects of tolerance. One is that you will tolerate indefinitely. Otherwise, what usually happens, I've tolerated and tolerated, I'm not going to tolerate anymore. That's called intolerance. So tolerance is a huge power. If you can tolerate endless insults, this, that, or the other. And together with that tolerance, you have to build your inner power, you see, so that you become so in your power that whatever it is that you're having to tolerate, your power becomes bigger than that, and it finishes, it stops. That's big power. You become invincible.
Okay, thanks.
I'm Shanti Denise. Oh, thank
Shanti.
You for your fascinating talk this evening. Just a quick question. If God is the source of virtues, are we automatically becoming virtuous by meditation or other practices? Or do we have to practice that in our own actions more?
In our?
in our own actions in like every day?
Oh yeah. Well, I think that, you know, there it is said, God is the ocean of virtues. So if you say, okay, if that is the case, then, you know, there's other things that are said, which is quite interesting about God. It's said that God gives everybody some virtues, some specialities, right? Everybody has different bits of it, or different amounts of different, yeah. So the other instruction that we've been given, which is quite an interesting one, is do not see people's defects, which are, of course, terribly visible. Do not see, but see their virtues, which are totally invisible. And so the practice of not seeing what's visible to the two eyes and really seeing what's really only visible to the third eye, which is this eye of discernment, discrimination, that can actually go right through the facade that everybody has and right into their core and see their virtue. And if you think everybody has a little bit of something from God, and if you can pick up the virtues of everybody, you have a good treasure store there, and that's a very nice way to go about it. And then, of course, automatically and naturally, it will take the form of virtue-based interaction. And then, of course, when you do that, then comes another concept, which is a concept of karma. You start interacting based on mutual benefit. See, otherwise, it's benefit for me, loss for you, and that causes an imbalance. But if you are, you know, having this give and take of mutual benefit, then you're enriching yourself, not at somebody else's expense, but you're enriching the other one too. So everybody gets wealthier, more civilized, more beautiful, more happy, etc. So we start operating with a different currency. I see. So I see it like that. We have one right at the back, another one at the back. We have a little bit of a limit. Probably we could have just these two, and otherwise we'll keep you here all night, and you might not like that.
So how do you deal with your energies where some might call them negative or destructive versus your what you would call virtuous or positive energies? Isn't there some conflict in trying to suppress these even negative energies? Doesn't that build up some sort of distortion within your own soul?
Yeah, that's a very important subject. And of course, if you suppress something, it's going to come out somewhere else, you know. You can't really do that. And this is where I think that when you start going into the idea of deep yoga, this comes up. Because a soul who is full of purity, peace, power, love and bliss doesn't have any negative energy. But as you use that up, the space left behind by the used up purity, peace, power, love and bliss becomes its opposite, or your dark side, you see. And so the idea is that you have to face your shadow and embrace it and accept it and come to terms with the fact that you are light and dark, and that there are times in your eternal history where you are more light and less dark, and other times where you are more dark and less light. Just like the day, you know, right now it's January and it's more dark than sunshine because of the seasons. And the soul also has a season. And so what we're trying to do with the spiritual practice is to absorb light from God, which actually takes the form of these different five elemental qualities, and then your dark side, while you do have to come to terms with it and deal with it and face it and all of that and embrace it and not mind about it, at the same time you're also increasing your light. And for that you have to be very patient, because it's not going to happen in a day. But if you're persistent and keep with it for your life, make it your life work, you do achieve that state of illumination, which is a great achievement. Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah, one more over there, and that I think better be our last one. Yeah.
Thank you, Denise. It was absolutely fascinating, your topic. While I was listening to you, I was just thinking about, what about if someone like an atheist, like Professor Richard Hawkinson, was sitting here, you know, saying, well, I actually don't believe in spirituality, I don't believe in God. Does it mean I don't have access to these virtues? Does it mean, you know, how would you answer someone like that? Because the argument is always like that. We don't have to come up with these things, because I'm not religious, I'm not spiritual. It doesn't mean, you know, I'm not this and this and that.
I remember one time, you know, God said, would you please bring me the atheists? And I thought that was so cool, you know. And I sort of went around looking for atheists, you know. So an atheist, what is an atheist? I suppose one description of an atheist is, according to the available descriptions of God, I don't go for any of them. Therefore, I don't go for God. That's one form of an atheist. Then there are others who say, well, you know, you don't actually need God to create the world. Religion seems to go against the principles of God. So I think God is just a figment of human imagination. So there are people like that. But there's another thing, which is that whether a person's an atheist or a theist or an agnostic or somewhere in between, and I remember when I was in Russia, the people said to me, they described themselves as, I was raised atheist. And they didn't say, I am atheist. They said, I was raised to be an atheist, which is an interesting statement to make about the self. Many, many people were doing this. But I think that a person is a spirit, whether they like it or not. And a spirit, when it gets empty, gets hungry. And so it needs to have some of the juice, you know. And I think that if the deep, pure feeling of that combination of purity, peace, power, love, and bliss is in the atmosphere, the atheist will feel it and say, this is nice. They say, I'm not going to call it God, but it doesn't matter. Call it what you want. But the soul needs that nourishment. You know, I think we don't have to worry about terminologies, because these are human-made in a way. Mm-hmm. Oh, last one. Okay. Okay, I'm going to repeat the question because nobody would have heard you. Brother is saying that he likes the virtues, but if you accumulate the powers, they could be negative and tarnish the virtues. You know, we have been taught power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? We've been taught money power, muscle power. A spiritual power is different. But you're right. It has to be held. You know, there's a saying in India. I don't know if you might recognize this. They say the milk of a lioness can only be held in a golden vessel. Have you heard this expression? And it's a curious expression, but it's symbolic. And the milk of the lioness is that nectar, that which gives you serious power. And the golden vessel refers to the intellect, the pure intellect. And so it's as if there is a sort of natural safety mechanism in place that the price of power is purity. And the seed of purity is humility. And the best way to get humble is humiliation. Unfortunately. But, you know. But I think if all your ego is fully wiped out by good, bad, or indifferent mechanisms, and if you can get through that, you know, you sort of earn the right to hold the power. But if you have ego, if you have impurity, then definitely that power will absolutely mess things up. So this is why I think that our main primary focus is on purity, on virtues, and then the power will come as and when it comes, you know. A bit more like that. Mm. So, would you like to have some meditation? Yeah. Thank you. So I'm sure many of you have experienced the meditation practice that we do, but in case any of you haven't, we generally meditate with open eyes. And there's a nice red picture behind me with a little dot in the middle of it. Yes, can you see it? So you can rest your eyes on that little white dot in the middle of the red field. And I will see if my brothers over there behind that partition can give us some gentle meditative music. That always helps. And begin to turn your attention within. So sit balanced. Both feet on the ground, and start to feel the energy of your being that is running throughout your body. And with your mind, just draw that energy from the extremities towards your heart. And then let it rise up and rest in the center of your forehead. This is the seat of the soul. And consider yourself to be a being of pure light, spirit, like a star. The totality of everything you are is merged in that point of light. And just allow yourself to forget everything for a while. And just be a point of light, at peace, a
and really feel your peace. Feel yourself to be the essence of love. You are a power and very powerful. You are essentially pure. And as you concentrate in this way, you can feel these essential qualities. But you need fill. And so just for a little while, allow yourself to rise above your body. Just let it be there in the chair. And let yourself rise like a rocket and fly beyond the mundane world. Find yourself out in space. Flying quickly at the speed of thought across the end of the universe, and enter a world of light on the other side. Just completely quiet and still. This is the home of souls, where we all came from. And in that region of light, there is a special light waiting for you. Allow yourself to go close to that light. Feel the waves of love and peace reaching you. And let that energy wash over you. And let yourself float in that ocean of light and love. And let it penetrate deep into your innermost being and fill you with strength. Let it clean you and heal you. Of the effects of a long time on the earth. Let yourself feel renewed, energized. And then gently let yourself glide back down . Reconnect with your body. Let that energy fill every cell in your body and your back in the everyday world, and bringing that energy, that love, that peace with you. Om Shanti. So did you like that? That was very easy, right? So you just go, drink, come back. Very easy. We call it easy Raj Yoga.
I'd like to thank Sister Denise for that fascinating talk. I want to give her a round of applause.
Thank you.
A couple of things for me. One thing, when she said it's not possible to have conflict in virtues. And also about addiction as well, that it's an illness, not necessarily because you're a bad person. It's touched me, so thank you.